Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening as always. Now, we're going to pick up the conversation with Peter Gwynn about ancient medical methods informing modern medical research. Peter is an editor at National Geographic. In the January 2019 edition, he has a fascinating article headlined, "Can Ancient Remedies Be Tomorrow's Cures?" Specifically, Chinese medical texts, hundreds of years old, informing and influencing serious medical research at Yale University and other places. Also, the digital assets for Peter's story are dynamic as well. The digital apothecary at nationalgeographic.com is definitely worth your time. Now, during the reportage for Peter's story, he began on a hunt for the real story around rhinoceros horns and that entire black market. That led to the study at Yale about herbs and treatment for nausea associated with chemotherapy. Then that research led to two more findings, the Chinese herbs' effect on actual cancerous tumor size and a formula that could elongate the efficacy of a donated organ.
Right now, transplanted organs, you know, there's a very limited window. You can take a human heart and put it into from a donor and take it into a recipient. And if these chemicals could extend that period, you could ship hearts potentially all around the world.
Yeah.
And how would that change the availability? You know, how many more people would survive, et cetera, et cetera. It's a fascinating piece of the research.
We pick up the story with Peter Gwynn discussing the research being done at Yale University and where it leads. Okay, here we go.
Dr. Chung at Yale tested a few of these different, you know, treatments for nausea. And he came upon this one, which is a well-known treatment in China. It's sold by a lot of different companies called Wang Qing Tang. That's sort of the name it's known by its traditional name. Mm-hmm. But what he realized when he went to China and he actually got a bunch of these different manufacturers that have made this that you can buy here kind of off the street in a lot of different places in China, he found out, you know, they were all this. It's this problem of the herbs. I mean, you know, none of them were the same and they didn't react the same. And so he figured out a way to get herbs. He found sourcing that he could trust that was, you know, very assiduously harvested. You know, records were kept very carefully. The herbs were processed in a very uniform way, and he started making batches of this stuff and testing it. And he got into FDA trials, and what he found out was that not only did every one of the patients that took this cure, his version is called PHY906, but it's the same four herbs that is found in Wang Qing Tang. What he found out was that, you know, it really worked great for nausea. So the first part of this was working. You know, the chemo patients were taking it. It reduced their nausea so they could continue taking more chemo treatments. But what he found was, and this was the startling thing, was that the patients that took PHY906, in addition to reducing their nausea, a control group that also had the same number of chemo treatments, they compared those two groups, and the patients that took the PHY906, their tumors shrank faster than the ones of. So it's the chemo plus the PHY906 that was actually having a direct impact on the actual cancer cells. And so that led to a whole new round of research. And why is that? You know, and they you can read in the article that he explains some of why that is, and research is ongoing. They're in, I think they finished the second phase. They're in, there's a three FDA trials, but what they're shooting for is to become the first multi-herb drug approved by the FDA in the United States, and that would be something significant. There are two currently single herb drugs, and like I was describing, you know, it's the trick of combining these things. You're really adding to the variables and the difficulty of keeping it uniform. So there are two single herb drugs that the FDA has approved, but this would be the first multi-herb drug. So it's a fascinating case study of where Chinese medicine, this is an 1,800-year-old treatment that actually might be on the front lines of the fight against cancer. That kind of stuff sort of gives you chills when you think about the potential there.
Right. I totally agree. That's what kept me going to the bottom of the article. We're speaking with Peter Gwynn, reporter/author/journalist at National Geographic. His article is How Ancient Remedies Are Changing Modern Medicine. It's in the January 2019 edition, but I will encourage you, and the links are in the show notes, to go online and check this out, because this interactive apothecary that you guys have posted is absolutely amazing. I got to ask you, and I don't usually out journalists on the air, but in this case I'm going to do it. Your lead is amazing. In my hand, I'm holding a warm, beating heart. How did that feel?
You know, it's funny you ask about that, Jason, because it was sort of an emotional experience. I mean, you know, I was in this lab at the University of Minnesota where they're doing tests on pig hearts to see how long they can prolong their life once they remove them from the actual body of a pig. This is all very carefully done. It's, you know, the pig is treated, you know, it's under sedation. The doctors are not taking this lightly, but it's a really important piece of research to figure out, you know, how long you can preserve organs. And pig hearts and human hearts are very similar. And so they had been soaking this heart while it was still in the pig in this bath of chemicals based on bear bile. It wasn't bear bile, but it was similar, mimicking bear bile. And bear bile is something that's used a lot in Chinese medicine. It's a very controversial thing, but it's a really fascinating piece of this story. And so he had taken the heart out after it had been soaking in this bath of chemicals, and then sparked it back to life, kind of the way a paramedic will spark a heart to get it back in rhythm. And I'm holding this thing, and it's still alive. And that really was like an emotional moment, in the sense of it reminds me of like this, the life force, you know, and then watching this heart just, you know, it's continuing to try to survive. I mean, you know, I know, and everybody in the room witnessing this knows that this thing is doomed. It's not, but it just, there's this, you know, this, it continued to beat and beat and beat, and went on for several hours afterwards. And that's part of this test. It's like, you know, how long, you know, do these chemicals help sustain your organs? And the implications for that would be huge on the transplant, you know, situation. Right now, transplanted organs, you know, there's a very limited window. You can take a human heart and put it into from a donor and take it into a recipient. And if these chemicals could extend that period, you know, then you could ship hearts potentially, you know, all around the world.
Yeah.
And how would that change the availability? And how would that, you know, how many more people would survive, et cetera, et cetera? It's a fascinating piece of the research. Anyway, this is all kind of tied into things that the Chinese recognized several hundred years ago.
Yeah. Wow. It's a fascinating story. It's a fascinating topic. Thank you for bringing it to life. NationalGeographic.com, just search for Chinese medicine. It's a fascinating read. Peter Gwynn, thank you so much for your time. Hope we can speak again soon.
Thanks, Jason.
That was Peter Gwynn, an editor at National Geographic and the author of the story that's headlined, Can Ancient Remedies Be Tomorrow's Cures? It's about how ancient cures are changing modern medical research and techniques. It's in the January 2019 edition of National Geographic, and it lives forever at nationalgeographic.com. Please check out the digital apothecary. I'm not kidding. It's a time suck that's worth it. Before we get gone for this week's broadcast, I'd like to circle back on the week of news around Apple. Two things played out. First is Apple's push into healthcare and medicine via its Apple Watch. Second is a partnership with DuckDuckGo, a search engine that does not share or sell your data. First, Apple has been in negotiations with private Medicare plans to find a way to get Apple Watches onto the wrists of people over 65. The newest Apple Watch has an electrocardiogram that monitors for atrial fibrillation, which can be a symptom of heart attack or stroke. It also has a fall monitor, so if someone falls down, an alert is sent to that person's emergency contact. Second, the partnership with DuckDuckGo. I've had them on several times, and I am an admitted fan. The search engine does not share or sell your data no matter what. And now it has partnered with Apple, a company that also puts privacy at the core of its mission statement. Another win-win here, DuckDuckGo gets Apple's rich mapping and location data to augment its searches, and Apple has a trusted partner in a search engine that also values privacy. At present, Google is paying Apple about $9 billion a year to be the default search engine on all iOS devices, iPhones, iPads, etc. So, when negotiations between Apple and Google open back up, Apple will already have a plan B in place via DuckDuckGo. We are online at facebook.com/techonomicsradio, and I'm on Twitter at KGOJason. For executive producer Lee Hammer, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics. Thank you for listening, and have great weeks, everybody.